Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am joined by Connor Orr. And Connor, we have what I think is going to be like chapter one of our trade deadline series, because I do think we're going to see more action, but boy, Rams got busy this week.
I feel like there's always pressure now. The earlier that we see teams making these deals, to make the blockbuster move first, and that is analogous to the media side, right? I know I have to get my trade deadline preview in by the end of September now to seem relevant. And so in that way, I'm sort of like Les Snead. We're very similar.
Yes, I was going to say, you got to do it in like July next year or something. Okay, so we're going to start this with, we'll be Rams-centric here with what they did to the secondary. Marcus Peters out, Jalen Ramsey in, the three draft picks, two first-rounders, and a 2021 fourth-rounder to get Ramsey from Jacksonville. We're going to talk about the Jaguars' impact, but let's talk about the Rams, and I'll kind of throw this out here. We had AJ Bouye, Andy and I had him on the show. We talked to him back last winter. We aired it this summer. But one thing he talked about when it came to playing alongside Jalen Ramsey is Ramsey always kind of did his own thing. If he wanted to shadow a guy on a certain play, he just did it. And it was up to AJ Bouye to go adjust. Those things weren't necessarily called from the sideline. So Ramsey wants to shadow number one receivers. He wants to be playing man coverage all the time. And in this Rams defense, we saw him try it a little bit with Peters last year, and it really didn't work out. I think this is the guy they've been looking for.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because sometimes, I mean, the functionality of that defense is not always exactly what you need. I mean, we've seen cornerbacks like Darrelle Revis struggle with that idea as he got older, but then we've seen cornerbacks like Stephon Gilmore where they've found a perfect place for them to really play that kind of defense. And so I'm fascinated to see how this is going to work out as much for the Rams as I am the Jaguars, because, you know, on the other end of that trade, Tom Coughlin is saying, hey, we're still competing for a playoff spot here, but that's not really the kind of move that you make if you're hoping to reach the postseason.
I guess in the most literal sense, they can say they are still competing for a playoff spot. They'll still take the field and whatnot. Look, they got good return for him. So give the Jaguars credit for that. And it was becoming abundantly clear that whatever the schism was, you know, there were reports that it was Coughlin, not Marone, was the guy who Ramsey kind of had beef with. But whatever it was, Ramsey did not want to play in Jacksonville. And you got to go get something for him. And we're going to talk about Trent Williams in a little bit and talk about why Washington won't do the same. But this Jaguars team, I guess to me, when you're doing, and it feels like it's time to sort of do an obit for the 2017 Jaguars and wonder about what could have been. But to me, it's kind of the trouble with relying on a defense to sort of stand on its head from year to year. That 2017 team, that defense was so talented, but they performed even better than what their talent was. And that's how you get, you know, whether it's the 2015 Broncos or the 2018 Bears or the 2000 Ravens, it's tough to look at a defense, no matter how good it is, and say, well, just do the same thing next year and we'll keep trying to figure it out on offense and just imagine what's going to happen when this offense gets really good. And it just seems like it never works out that way.
I think that when we write the obit, it's important to mention that at the time, I think that the move was brilliant, right? Because at the time that they were constructing this roster, we were in this supposed quarterback drought and there was going to be no more quarterbacks ever. And they came up with this idea to utilize a percentage of their salary cap in the best way possible for a team that could not find someone to throw the football. And I think that they built like a really brilliant team for the moment. But like you said, I mean, it's just so hard to sustain that without someone to move the football. And obviously they broke down and signed Nick Foles and sort of came to that recognition that, you know, they weren't able to do this anymore. And you're right. I mean, part of that is defensive schemes change, offenses evolve. But yeah, I mean, it's I'm sad. I'm not happy about writing the obit on the 2017 Jaguars. They were a fun team for me to watch. And I think they were a little underrated. I think people hated them because they were trendy every year for like 4 years until they actually got good. And then when they got good, everyone was already too cool for the Jaguars. So they never had they never got to have their moment, you know?
They didn't. And look, and not that we have to relive that AFC title game, but my gosh, they had that in their hands in Foxborough. A sketchy call here, a bounce there. Bortles was just a little too, just barely overthrew a couple of balls late in that game and the Jaguars in the Super Bowl. But no, I don't know.
It goes back to an argument that I used to have with your former co-host on this podcast, which made him very angry, which is that the NFL is rigged. It's fixed. There are shadowy forces that, when they saw Jacksonville on the verge of the Super Bowl, freaked out and pressed all the panic buttons, and they just wouldn't let it happen. That's what it was.
That was a code red. That
please put the Patriots in. Anybody else but the league's smallest market, Northern Florida.
Oh, man. Well, poor Jaguars. We'll see. They have a chance to go through a little rebuild right now. Still just so many questions on offense. And now you have the questions on defense. And Calais Campbell probably doesn't see the other end of this sort of restocking now. And I don't know. Kind of a bummer here. But
they did get more than the Raiders got for Khalil Mack. So
I know. That is wild. And look, as far as the Rams go, again, the idea was like you have Marcus Peters and obviously Aqib Talib, and they're these off-coverage cornerbacks, and then Aaron Donald creates the pressure, and they, you know, these guys, these ball-hawking cornerbacks are there to just scoop up interceptions, and it just didn't work out with Marcus Peters. He goes out to Baltimore, but I do want to talk about one more move that the Rams made here, because when you're talking about the 2019 Rams and the issues they've had, it really comes down to the offensive line. And John Sullivan, you know, they declined the option and he sort of retires, and Roger Saffold signs with the Titans. And the guys they replaced him with, the two guys who were in the program, who they were counting on, that would be Brian Allen, the center, and Joseph Noteboom, the now injured guard. I mean, they have been they've been atrocious. And maybe there's better days ahead, but they are just not NFL caliber players at the moment. So they went out and got Austin Corbett, who was sort of similarly disappointing in Cleveland, couldn't get on the field for what we all know is not a very good offensive line in its own right. He has that, you know, you don't live down your draft spot. He was an early second round pick, and maybe they unlock something in his talent here. He changes scenery. Does it work with these guys? Probably not, but it's something, I guess. It's probably the best you can do at this point.
And you put him around better, better offensive linemen on the high end, right? I mean, you know, you put him around Andrew Whitworth and it can't get worse, I think, is the theory. But, you know, it's so funny to see teams taking stock of what they need and making moves, and the Browns are like, yeah, we have offensive linemen, yeah, boy. That's not a problem for us. Go ahead and take the extra ones we have.
That's what's so alarming about it. I mean, if Corbett couldn't get on the field on that team, and look, hey, it's you know, not to pick on the Browns, but it's been a lifelong hobby of mine. But if he couldn't get on the field there, what does that tell you about him? Despite the, you know, despite the draft spot and all that stuff, it's tough. It is so tough to repair your offensive line at this time of year. I don't know. This feels like bad news for Austin Corbett and bad news for the Rams.
Yeah, you know, and that's what makes the offensive line market so interesting this year. I mean, we had talked about, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit more now, but, you know, if you're a team like the Browns or, you know, any team that needs offensive line help, I mean, Trent Williams just sitting there has to be so aggravating, and the fact that he's been theoretically available but unavailable. And the same thing, I think, with Brandon Scherff a little bit too. I mean, this is a bad bottoming out team with a player that's great on an expiring contract, and it seems like they're not even entertaining the fact of letting these teams go and accumulating some assets and doing a good ground up rebuild there in Washington. And it stinks because there's a bunch of contending teams that could use offensive line help, and it's never available this time of year. And this could really change the course of some franchises.
Well, they're two games out of first place, Connor. That's a contending team there in Washington. So, trying to put together a win streak, we'll see how this plays out. But I'm totally with you. And the only thing I can think of is, like, they don't want to set that precedent of a guy with 2 years left on the deal basically being able to force his way out. If you're Trent Williams, and again, I have no reason not to take his comments at face value that this is about the medical staff and all that, but he must be looking around at some of these offensive line contracts and then looking at his and being like, are you kidding me? Like, I can get one more monster deal out of this career. I'm not gonna play in Washington with this crap team and go that route. One more deal connected to all these Rams transactions here, and that is obviously Marcus Peters going to Baltimore. Pairs with Earl Thomas, ball hawking secondary there for the Ravens. I kind of wonder if they have the pass rush to sort of create those turnover opportunities for these guys on the back end. They didn't. They just didn't have a lot of turnovers last year, a lot of takeaways. And I wonder if Peters is quite the right fit, but he's talented. Might as well roll the dice on him.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there is nothing wrong with a marginal upgrade at this time of year, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're Eric DaCosta, you're almost playing with those picks. I mean, I think you traded a fifth rounder and you got a fifth rounder for Kari Vidvec, you know? So, I mean, you have those pieces in place. You traded away Joe Flacco. And so you have all these mid-round picks. And if something like that's available, I mean, that's low-hanging fruit for a general manager who's willing to put the work in, make five phone calls, and get something done. I mean, I don't see how this hurts him, especially since all the indications coming out of L.A. are that Peters kind of rehabilitated his personality there, too, and sort of fell in line with Wade Phillips, and he comes to another defensive coordinator in Baltimore that has that same sort of cachet and seniority. So, I mean, I think it works from a lot of different angles.
It's certainly low risk. That's absolutely right. And I don't know. We're thinking there's more to come here. I think we'll be talking trade deadline next week too.
I hope so. I mean, what, you know, the Jalen Ramsey thing, it's just sort of like, it's like when Netflix drops an entire season in one day and you're just like, all right, you know, now what?
Yeah.
maybe it's like Emmanuel Sanders is the next like cool thing to happen, or Chris Harris, or, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know, maybe Vic Beasley is another big one. But, you know, we've kind of gotten the season finale like 2 weeks before we all were expecting it, you know.
I was going to say we were supposed to pace ourselves on this. We were supposed to discover these, hold back on Jalen Ramsey and talk about it like a week from now maybe. But it's too much. Too much going on. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And then going to come right back in a rapid fire some of these Week 7 matchups. Stay tuned. All right, let's talk some Week 7 matchups. I should mention before we get going, we are hoping to have a very special guest join us for next week's show. We're still finalizing some details, but for now, it's just me. I'm going to run through all the Week 7 games here and talk about, I don't know, the things that are interesting. Seems like that'd be a good podcast. Let's get to it. Start with Sunday Night Football, Eagles at Cowboys. Now, there's not much margin for error in the NFC, and there's really a good chance that one of these two teams, and I really think they're both very good teams, only one of these teams ultimately gets to the postseason. That's what makes this one so huge. I don't think the Cowboys offense has looked that far away. I was disappointed with how conservative they were in the Saints loss. Other than that, it's, Dak's got to do a little bit better job in the pre-snap phase. Other than that, though, I don't think they're that far off. The interesting thing here is going to be if Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills, the two cornerbacks, are back for the Eagles, does Jim Schwartz now feel good enough to dial up some of these blitzes and trust those corners in man coverage on the outside? And if so, does Dak Prescott deliver against what is still a pretty susceptible secondary at this point? A lot of question marks going into this one for two teams that, I don't know. I really, truly think that they are both sort of 10 to 12 win caliber if things go right. But bit of a big one, as big as they get in Week 7. Let's go Ravens Seahawks here. Now you got our love Earl Thomas going back to Seattle, and a year ago you had the Ravens with Eric Weddle in the chess match with his former quarterback teammate Philip Rivers in the Chargers game, where the Ravens really got the better of Rivers in December. I'm not sure there are a whole lot of tendencies you can pick up on with Russell Wilson and his sort of improvisational jazz style. And then there's the fact that he simply just makes so many plays and so many throws at the end of those plays that are just downright indefensible. Other side of the ball, Lamar Jackson, tough environment on the road, fast defense, a team that doesn't blitz a ton. I think it's a good litmus test for where Jackson is right now. We might have gotten a little bit carried away with the first couple of games. Miami, if you didn't hear, just not very good at football. But he's still showing a lot of flashes, a lot of good habits. The weapons aren't great, but I think this is one where we get a better read on where Jackson is right now. And I don't know. I think we're going to feel pretty optimistic about it coming out of this one. Saints at Bears. Teddy Bridgewater so impressive in the Tampa win, kind of looked like his old self against Jacksonville last week. A little more conservative. The Saints obviously didn't need a ton of points. They really haven't needed a lot of points out of this offense ever since Drew Brees went down. Alvin Kamara might not be ready to go in this one because of the high ankle sprain. This is shaping up to be an absolute slugfest, exactly the kind of game that you never saw the Saints play in the last couple of years. But between the Saints and the Bears, you have two of the league's best defenses. Maybe the Saints find a vulnerability in the middle of that Bears defensive line now that they'll be without all-pro defensive tackle Akeem Hicks. I just think this one's going to be ugly, and it might just come down to who gets that turnover, who gets that weird, muffed punt or something like that, and the game swings there. But this really feels like one that's going to be played in the teens. Rams at Falcons. First of all, I hope Marcus Peters plays because I'd love to see a Peters-Julio Jones matchup right off the bat here. But other side of the ball here, Falcons have been the team that everyone gets right against. The Rams' biggest issue, Austin Corbett or not, has been the offensive line. Falcons' perennially disappointing pass rush has flashed every now and then, like once a month or so. They looked good in that win over the Eagles, and that was back in, what was that, week two, week three. I guess I'm saying I wouldn't count on the Rams walking into Atlanta and sort of finding their old selves and putting up 38 points or whatever everyone seems to put up on the Falcons these days. This one is, it's a test. It's going to be a test for a Rams offense that is just, it's flawed at this point. I don't know how else you can really put it. Texans at Colts. Individual matchup of the week is DeAndre Hopkins versus, if he's healthy, Pierre Desir. These are two guys who brawl on absolute every route. Desir definitely got the better of Hopkins last time they met last January in the wild card round, of course. The Texans improved offensive line play and the return of the drop-prone but still dangerous Will Fuller gives them some options should Desir get the better of Hopkins again in this one. And of course, Desir has that hamstring to deal with. Let's hope he plays because that's always a great matchup between those two. Vikings at Lions. The Lions could not do anything against this Vikings defense in their two matchups last year. And that was due to a combination of just terrible offensive line play and quite frankly, just a scheme that was not very good. Darrell Bevell, he's getting the ball downfield with Matthew Stafford this year. It's a different looking offense. I know they haven't been able to punch out teams, but I think they can get a shot or two against this Vikings defense. And this is a game, the Lions at home, if you're going to make the playoffs out of this NFC North division that is absolutely stacked, you got to hold serve at home. This is one that they kind of, saying anyone has to have one in week seven is a bit of an overstatement, but they kind of really, really would like to have this one, I guess is how you'd phrase it. Raiders at Packers. You saw the Packers on Monday night working a little more play action. It looked a little more like the offense we thought we were going to get with Matt LaFleur this year. And, whether or not they have Devontae Adams back, you can do some of the old school sort of Aaron Rodgers improvisational stuff if Adams is back. If he's not, they have to keep leaning toward that structured offense like they did on Monday night. We'll see. We'll see what they have here against a Raiders defense that has certainly been game. Certainly the Packers are more talented up front here if you're talking about this pass rush versus Packers line. So, I don't know. Green Bay, should have their way with the Raiders in this one, but you know, we'll see. I'm interested to see what this offense is going to be going forward, especially if they have to go without Adams again. Dolphins at Bills. It is kind of mean for Miami to put Josh Rosen back in the lineup for this one. The Dolphins can't handle the Bills' pass rush, and they're once again at a severe disadvantage when you're talking about their receivers versus this Buffalo secondary. I'm not sure how many points the Bills can put up. I know a lot of people in Buffalo are sort of wringing their hands a little bit and wondering, you know, when are they going to have that 28, 31, 34-point outburst here. Maybe it's in this one, maybe not, but I'd just be shocked if the Dolphins could really keep up with the Bills in this game. 49ers go to Washington. Early start there, so I don't know, maybe body clock factors into this or something like that, but when it's all said and done, Washington can't handle this 49ers pass rush. We'll see if Bill Callahan and Kevin O'Connell can create some sort of favorable matchups with Terry McLaurin, maybe move him around a little bit and see what they can do. But mostly, I mean, look, they just got to hand it to Adrian Peterson 25 times and hope they can hang around and really hope they get Jimmy Garoppolo on a bad day again. Garoppolo's been up and down, really a little too uneven this year. It hasn't come back to haunt him because defense has dominated, but weird things happen when teams from the West have to come east and play these early starts, but certainly talent-wise and schematically, you'd expect the 49ers to cruise in this one. Chargers at Titans. Unfortunately, it looks like a wasted year in Nashville. It's a very good defense. They just don't have the offense to support it. Ryan Tannehill gets a good matchup against a fairly limited Chargers defense. I know Joey Bosa does his thing, and you know, Casey Hayward can play, etc. But it's just not a, you know, it's not a Chargers defense that has done a whole lot of creative things without Derwin James this year. So I don't know. Tannehill gets a chance to do something productive here. I don't think he's better than Marcus Mariota. I think this is, at best, a lateral move. As far as Mariota, I wouldn't count out him returning to the lineup at some point this year, but it's probably over for him in Nashville. I'm still curious to see what would happen if he had an offense that was really built around what he's comfortable with and what he likes to do. I'm just saying, I hope maybe Chicago next year, reunite with an old coach there and Mark Helfrich and maybe get something going there for a team that at this rate is probably going to be shopping for a quarterback anyway. Cardinals at Giants. This is a rare instance where the Cardinals really won't be at a disadvantage as far as their receivers going against an opponent's defensive backs. The schedule has had them zigzagging across the country, and maybe it's sluggish in an early start, but this might end up being the best you've seen yet out of Kyler Murray, and really you get to see sort of a full-fledged version of what this Cliff Kingsbury offense is supposed to be. Because, look, Christian Kirk is a fine player. Larry Fitzgerald is obviously still very good, but it's just not the kind of receiving core that you need to sort of make this this Kingsbury offense work. But this is one where they can get it going a little bit. Jaguars at Bengals, a team that knew it was going nowhere against an opponent who just confirmed that they are going nowhere. Gardner Minshew has a chance to get back on track as the Jaguars deploy some of John DeFilippo's route combinations against a Bengals defense that is just not very good up the middle on the back end. And I expect both teams to play all 60 minutes of this game because they're all collecting paychecks for it. Monday night, Patriots at Jets. This is all I'm going to say. Adam Gase, team he coached, upset the Patriots at home each of the past two seasons. And those Dolphins team that Gase had down there, they had a fraction of the talent that this year's Jets team has. You saw what happened with Darnold back in the lineup last week. They might get C.J. Mosley back for the Monday nighter, which is just big because you need that guy who's your nerve center when you're facing this Patriots offense with all the different things they do with especially with James White and all that. So yeah, sure, the Jets are unlikely to win this one, but don't rule this one. Don't think you're getting another Luke Falk Jets versus the Browns type of Monday night performance here. I think the Jets can keep this one interesting, especially as the Patriots still kind of find their footing offensively going forward here, but not the Monday night dud that some of you might be fearing. I guess that's my guarantee of a Jets victory. And with that, we will end this week's show. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire line of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever you listen to podcasts.